loving God. May the words of my mouth, may the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your eyes. And God, may I never lightly presume to preach your word. And may we never lightly presume to hear your word. For in your word is abundant life. Amen. If you look closely at your bulletin, you'll notice that that last hymn was not designated as a congregational request. Yes, the second part is lovely, but the first, I mean, you only have to sing one note pretty much, but it's rather grating, discomforting, and irritating. Nobody ever requests that one at a hymn sing, and I've never heard it played at a wedding. The truth is, nobody likes it, so we just tend to skip over it. Not me. Not us. The gospel this morning. Jesus was teaching in the temple, and he was teaching, it said, with great authority, when a man possessed with an unclean spirit made himself known, and he spoke, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." And Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And there was a convulsing and crying, and he came out. Nobody particularly likes that story. Because, you know, we're modern, intelligent people, and we don't want to hear about demons and convulsing and that. We don't want to come to church on Sunday and hear about an exorcism. Because that's what that was, right? You know that. That's an exorcism. Maybe not as dramatic as the movies would have it, but that's an exorcism. And nobody likes those stories. We tend to skip over them. Not me. Not us. Exorcism is actually a very old church rite. It was actually part of the baptism service at one time, which would be really awesome if we had a baptism here and we performed an exorcism during it. That used to be done. But don't worry, I'm not planning to do that. The United Church is not much for exorcisms. We sort of see them as a part of a superstitious past. It's not our thing. But in some denominations, exorcism is apparently on the rise. In the early 60s, there was like a small group of Roman Catholic priests with the training and the experience to do exorcism. But now, there are hundreds, I think actually maybe even into the thousands. And that's just the Roman Catholic Church. Exorcisms are increasing in the Orthodox Church and some Protestant churches. Maybe they're on to something. Now, I'm not suggesting anything dramatic, you know, like a horror movie. But maybe we are a little bit possessed. What do you think? Look around. Anybody here this morning strike you as possessed? I was going to ask that when we were shaking hands, you know. Make an effort to shake hands with somebody you think is possessed. I think that might have been a really neat start to the morning. And I'd probably now be preaching to four people. Still, I think some of us might be. I mean, I'm not talking about powerful evil spirit that changes and controls you. I'm thinking about something else. Like in the gospel, in that story, the man possessed was in church, right? He was, well, in temple. He was in church. Don't you think that's intriguing? And one might assume that he was a regular attendee, or the story would have mentioned that he just wandered in and everybody stared. Didn't say that. And I also note that the manifestation of his possession, this possession by a demon, is not mentioned, as one might expect if it was a dramatic possession. Right? Like they don't mention him screaming or wrecking things or talking in a supernatural voice. His head doesn't spin around. Nothing Hollywood happens here. I think maybe this man was suffering some kind of subtle possession that people hardly even noticed. Probably came to church every week. Nobody really noticed. But when Jesus was there, maybe he didn't even know he was possessed until... Is that possible? Could you be possessed without even knowing it? Here's how I imagine it. So one day, almost any day, except that this was a special day, it was in the month of gray and cold. Not as cold as it used to be, but that's not what made it special. And people were in church, a pretty good number, actually. That's not what made it special. And the hymns were really good, and that's not what, no, never mind. They were easy to sing. There were a couple of oldies and a couple of goodies, but you know, just a couple, thank goodness. And the gospel passage was good. It was a nice, easy parable, and the psalm was pleasing and easy to understand. Still not what made it special. And Jesus came. That's what made it special. Seriously, on this otherwise normal day, Jesus arrived at church. And you could tell it was Jesus. He wasn't wearing sandals or a robe or anything. Just jeans and a hoodie, actually. He didn't have much of a beard. It was more of a, I didn't feel like shaving this weekend kind of look. And he didn't really look like all the pictures. He looked pretty normal, except that he glowed just a little. Enough for you to know that he was Jesus. Like most people, he arrived a little late, so no one really recognized him at first. And that's how they got through most of the service, almost right to the sermon before they actually noticed. But once they did, I mean, once everybody sort of recognized the glow, well, people were stunned, and everything in church kind of stopped. The preacher, she was smart, she recognized him and said, asked if he wanted to speak. He said, no thanks, really, I'm fine. And he said it with such authority, just like the Bible said he would, that nobody knew what else to say, but some persisted. So Jesus, tell us about that passage that we just heard from the Bible. Is it true? And Jesus laughed. It's a parable. So of course it's true. Every time that it makes sense to you, it's true. Every time it makes you think again, it's true. Every time it makes you wonder or change your mind, it's true. But I don't know that you're ever going to find the Good Samaritan in a history book. And immediately the preacher was quite relieved that she hadn't started the sermon before Jesus had spoken. Then some called out, Jesus, are you here to help us find a vice chair for our council? And another called out, are you here to help us balance the books? Can you fix the Leafs? Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Emboldened, the crowd continued. It was getting frenzied. What do we do? What do we do at Bible study? Should it be different? Should we be more progressive or more traditional? Is pancake church a good thing, or should we stay away from carbs, Jesus? Do you want to run the garage sale? Have you signed up to have your picture taken? It was all over the place. And Jesus, he just sort of looked stunned, like a deer caught in the headlights. Easy, easy now. I just came to sing and pray. And someone asked, then what do you have to do with us, Jesus? What do you have to do with us? Are we in trouble? Now, one has to be careful in trying to analyze the Son of God. I mean, traditional psychiatric observations are probably unwise. I'm not sure where Jesus would be on the Enneagram, his true colors, or his Myers-Briggs personality type. And I'm not sure that Freudian, Jungian, or Dr. Fillion analysis would be of any real value. But I will tell you that it looked like he was struck by what was said, almost like a memory had caught him, because his face got serious for a second. He was focused, and he asked, well, he asked everybody, what's important to you? Stunned silence. He asked one man in particular, what's important to you? I mean, really important. What do you think about when you're driving to work? When you go to sleep at night? When you're trying to decide things? What's on your mind? Well, reluctant to answer, because it was a rather personal question, but not wanting to be the guy who refused to answer his Redeemer, he said, my job, I guess. I think about it a lot. It's a tough economy, and I worry that I might not make enough money to get my kids through school. I mean, I suppose I could even lose my job, so I got to be on top of things. I have to get my work done and not rock the boat, you know? I have bills to pay, a family to support, and they're not going to be happy with me if I lose my job. And Jesus took it all in, nodded thoughtfully, He asked another person the same question, and he got a mumble as she turned away from the question. He asked another, "What do you think about as you go to sleep at night, when you wake up in the morning? What are you thinking?" "How I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the best at my job. I'm going to be the best mom. I'm going to be the best wife. I make the best cookies for school, or I buy them for the best shop if I don't have time. And I'm the best mom at gymnastics, always understanding, never pushing my daughter. I'm the best at organizing things here at church. Just ask anyone. Like, if you need something done, ask Sarah. That's me. My mom wasn't the best. She tried sometimes. But I'm not going to be like her. I'm going to be the best." And Jesus looked out at the congregation. He looked out with warm eyes and a stern face, and he told them, "There are a lot of unclean spirits here. You're all possessed." And the preacher spoke up because she didn't like the way this was going. "Jesus, if we were possessed, then surely we'd know and we'd do something about it. Like, we have all sorts of self-help groups in this church. We've got AA, we got ZZ, and everything in between." And Jesus looked at her patiently and lovingly. He said, "You know those old shoes that you have? Right at the front of your closet, the ones you'll put on as soon as you get home from church? They're old. They're worn. One side's more worn than the other. You actually stand kind of lopsided when you wear them. And you know that you should get new ones. It'd be better for your feet, it'd be better for your back. Your headaches might even go away if you got new shoes, but you won't because you're used to them. In a strange way, you kind of like them." And the preacher wondered when Jesus had been in her house, because the shoes were exactly where he said they'd be. And they were exactly like he said they were. "That's what possession is like," Jesus said. "It's not like the movies." And then he went through the whole congregation, looking people in the eye and naming the spirit that possessed each one. "You're not good enough. You can't be more like your brother. What's wrong that you can't enjoy life? Everything that's wrong is your fault. You're not a good enough parent. You never fit in. You can't save money." And then Jesus spoke loudly so that all could hear. And he spoke with love, but also with great authority. "Enough! Out, unclean spirits! You, let go. You're not perfect. You don't need to be. You can't be more like your brother. You don't need to be. The world does not rest on your shoulders. Your family does not love you because of your job. You are a loving parent. You fit in just fine with me. It's not that you can't save, it's that you keep spending. Let go of your possessions and possessors and possess me. Let me possess you. Take hold of me. Let me take hold of you. Look at me. Learn from me. The divine and the human in one. God in flesh. Your flesh in God. Are you getting it? Knowing that God is with you, that the divine is one with the flesh, how can you imagine that your worth depends on your job? Or your performance, or some comparison with another person? How could you possibly be not good enough? You wonder what I have to do with you? Everything. Because I am with you in everything. I've been born, I've argued with my mother. I've been lost, and I've fought with my brothers. I have moved and had to find a new job and new friends. And I have struggled, and I have hurt. And I have been belittled and besmirched and betrayed. I've been killed. But none of that holds me down. None of that stops me. None of that defines me, because I am one with God. And that's what defines me, that I am one with God. And so are you, one with God. God's love surrounds and fills you. But are you willing to let it define you? Will you let it possess you? Possession is that which defines you. You are one with God. That's what possesses you, what defines you. What do you think about the first thing in the morning? What do you think about as you're driving to work? What do you think about as you're going to sleep at night? What do you possess? What possesses you? Is it that you are one with God? If not, then I say to that unclean spirit, be silent and come out. But for that spirit to come out, you're going to have to let it go. And with that, Jesus left the building. That's how I imagined it anyway. That's how I picture it in my mind. See, I wonder sometimes if I'm possessed and what it would feel like to define myself first and foremost as one with God. Or what if I defined myself as surrounded and filled by the love of God? I'll bet it feels warm and not gray. I'll bet it feels connected and not alone. I bet it feels special. And you know what? When I think about it, honestly, I know that feeling. I've just got to start letting go of a few things in my life so that I can feel that more often. So that I can let that define and possess me. How about you? Thanks be to God. Amen.